Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Tears on the witness stand as a former police officer tries to convince a jury she did nothing unlawful. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
Under oath.
I remember yelling, taser, taser, taser.
Emotional and in her own words.
And then he told me I shot him.
Kim Potter, the former police officer who shot and killed Dante Wright, on the stand in her own defense. Schools nationwide disrupted. Police forced to increase patrols, all because of an alleged viral hoax.
It's social media. If they can put it out there, it can be caught.
COVID hitting hard. Restaurants closing. NFL games postponed. Now a new strategy to keep kids in the classroom. What the CDC is calling for. A last-minute holiday shopping blitz. Millions set to hit the stores. Now retailers are preparing for Super Saturday. A major vaccine setback for young kids. A new probe into buy now, pay later services. And can Spider-Man save the theaters with rising COVID spread?
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. The situations playing out in parts of our country right now are both jarring and familiar. COVID is spreading fast and hospitalizations are rising. The virus once again disrupting everything from live performances to restaurants to schools and sports. The NFL announced today it's postponing three games this weekend as the league deals with an outbreak among players. Similar story in college hoops. Two of the top-ranked teams in the nation, Duke and UCLA, both scrapping games from their schedule. In New York City, another popular tourist attraction canceled. Just last hour, Radio City announced the Rockettes nixed all of their shows for the remainder of the season. The new wave of infections also taking a toll on restaurants and bars in the big city. At least a dozen temporarily closed this week. Today, the New York governor, Kathy Hochul, said New York State recorded its highest number of cases since the pandemic began, close to 21,000, and the majority of them still the Delta variant. But the CDC director warns Omicron will become the most dominant strain in the U.S. in a matter of weeks. Dr. Rochelle Walensky says it reinforces the need for more Americans to get vaccinated and boosted.
We've seen cases of Omicron among those who are both vaccinated and boosted, and we believe these cases are milder or asymptomatic because of vaccine protection.
Meantime, the White House just announced a new plan to keep kids in classrooms. The strategy allows children to stay in school even if they've been exposed to COVID. Here's NBC's Heidi Prisbulla on our top story tonight.
The White House is concerned about major disruptions at hospitals and schools due to Omicron, and they outlined a plan to prevent what we saw last year, which is most children learning virtually. We now have new data and updated CDC guidance showing the effectiveness of an approach called Test to Stay, which involves frequent rapid testing of students at least two times per week and robust contact tracing. The idea is that with frequent testing, even kids who may have been exposed do not need to quarantine as long as they test negative. The second part is a partnership with teachers' unions to get as many teachers boosted as possible. Omicron is already prompting some school closures, though, and this is before it truly crashes ashore here. One of the new CDC studies that the CDC director cited is based on 90 schools in Lake County, Illinois, and it estimated that Test to Stay prevented more than 8,000 missed school days, but some schools are already closing with a rise in COVID positivity. I've also interviewed school officials about Test to Stay, and it basically requires a lot of manpower, requiring a lot of supplies and staffing that these schools just don't have. Yet they are especially vulnerable given their vaccination rates. Just 18% of kids age 5 to 11 have had at least one shot. That's 61% of those age 12 to 17 who've had a single dose. Shep?
Heidi Prisbulla, thank you. As the Biden administration ramps up its push for booster shots, millions of young Americans still are not even eligible for the first dose. Today, a new setback for families with kids 5 and under. Pfizer reporting some disappointing data from a trial that could delay the shot even further. CNBC's Meg Terrell covers medicine for us and science. Meg, what happened here?
Yeah, Shep, Pfizer's been testing much lower doses of its vaccines for kids under 5, 2 doses of 3 micrograms each, compared with 10 micrograms for kids 5 to 11 and 30 for those 12 and older and adults. But the company disclosed today that that doesn't appear to be enough for kids ages 2 to 4. The immune response they saw with 2 doses didn't stack up with the comparison group of teens and young adults. While they did see strong results in even younger ages, 6 to 24 months, Pfizer's now adding a 3rd dose to the series to see if that can provide high levels of protection across the board. The 3rd dose will be given at least 2 months after the 2nd. And Pfizer says if the 3-dose study is successful, it plans to ask the FDA for clearance in the first half of 2022. That's a delay of a couple months from what many in the public health world and parents were hoping for. The company is also testing 3rd doses in all other age groups up through 17, suggesting the additional dose will provide stronger protection against variants including Omicron. Perhaps the first steps to making this a 3-dose vaccine across the board. Shep?
Meg Terrell, thanks very much. And there's breaking news now on CNBC. We just got word a United States appeals court has just reinstated the White House's workplace COVID-19 vaccine and testing mandate. Again, that's just in from an appeals court. Ahead on the news, COVID upending sports. A closer look at the disruptions inside the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL. Kim Potter broke down in tears on the witness stand today as she testified in her own defense at her manslaughter trial. The now former cop sobbed as she described shooting Dante Wright during a traffic stop in the Minneapolis suburb Brooklyn Center back in April. She told the jury how she feared for her partner's safety and pulled her gun instead of her taser by mistake in a moment of chaos, as she put it. She insisted she did not mean to shoot him.
We were struggling. We were trying to keep him from driving away. It just went chaotic. I remember yelling, taser, 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 and nothing happened. And then he told me I shot him.
Kim Potter testified she doesn't remember a lot after the shooting, including when she said this to her fellow officers.
Just breathe.
I'm going to go to prison. The prosecutor questioned Potter about why she thought she was going to prison.
You knew that deadly force was unreasonable and unwarranted in this circumstance.
I didn't want to hurt anybody.
You didn't want to hurt anybody. That's why you said, I'm going to go to prison.
I don't.
The prosecutor also pressed Kim Potter on how she could possibly mix up her taser and her gun, especially after receiving extensive taser training every year, including just 1 month before that shooting. NBC's Shaquille Brewster covering the case from the courthouse tonight.
Shep, Potter testified for about 2 hours and was incredibly emotional throughout her testimony. At one point, her defense team even calling for a lunch break as she struggled to recount the moments before the shooting. Throughout the trial, we heard her defense team argue the use of force was justified because of Potter's concern that the officer on the passenger side of the vehicle was at risk of getting seriously hurt if Wright drove off. Potter described that fear on the stand.
I can see Sergeant Johnson and the driver struggling over the gear shift because I can see Johnson's hand and then I can see his face. He had a look of fear on his face. It's nothing I've seen before.
But under cross-examination, Potter said she never intended to use deadly force, and prosecutors questioned the level of threat that she believed Wright posed.
You never saw a weapon on Mr. Wright, did you?
No.
Never saw a gun?
No.
You never threw a punch, right?
No.
Never kicked anyone?
No.
Never said, I'm going to kill you?
No.
Never said, I'm going to shoot you?
No.
Never said, there's a gun in the car and I'm coming after you?
No.
Prosecutors also highlighting that she never made any attempt to render aid and never communicated the mistake that she says she ultimately made. Now, her testimony came after defense called witnesses who testified that she was peaceful and that she had a good reputation in the department, but she was the final defense witness. There will be no rebuttal witnesses from the prosecution, meaning closing arguments are slated for Monday.
Chuck Brewster from Minneapolis. Schools across the country today stepped up security. Some even canceled classes after reports of a vague threat on social media. It called for a national day of school shootings. School officials say some of the posts appeared on TikTok, but police from coast to coast say they didn't find any actual credible threats. They did, however, make a handful of arrests. Here's CNBC's Perry Russum.
Today, police arresting a high school student north of Miami, accused of bringing a loaded gun to class. In Fort Myers, Florida, four students arrested, including a 13-year-old, after police say they made school threats on social media. In Rapid City, South Dakota, classes canceled.
We knew that for the past several days there was the potential for some social media threats that were out there, this TikTok challenge.
Schools across the country on alert, citing a trend of violent threats on TikTok. But a spokesperson for TikTok says they have not found evidence of threats starting or spreading on their platform, adding, "We are deeply concerned that the proliferation of local media reports on an alleged trend that has not been found on the platform could end up inspiring real-world harm." TikTok's use among teens is growing. More than 60% of kids between the ages of 12 and 17 have an account. Last year, that number was 50%. The fear of violence comes 2.5 weeks after the school shooting in Michigan and days after the 9th anniversary of the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary. Today, outside of Philadelphia, police not taking any chances.
I think it's incumbent upon families and school officials to help them understand that something that they might mimic from a TikTok challenge or something they might mimic from social media can have really grave consequences.
They're going to get caught. It's social media. If they can put it out there, it can be caught.
Just a few months ago, TikTok was getting some heat for a challenge where kids would break stuff, steal stuff at school, and then post it online. TikTok removed those videos from its platform, saying it violated community standards. Shep.
The news is Perry Russum. Thank you. It was supposed to be a multi-billion dollar deal, the money coming from the Sackler family, the owners of Purdue Pharma. But a judge overturned that deal. So what happens now? We'll ask one of the attorneys general who fought for this ruling live with us next. The defense rests in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, but not before Maxwell makes a key decision. Why she says she decided not to take the stand. And Tiger Woods back on the course, competing for the first time since his high-speed crash, but the spotlight not just on him. Tonight, how his 12-year-old stole the show.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
COVID crisis on the gridiron. As we reported earlier, the NFL is postponing games for the first time this season due to COVID outbreaks. The Las Vegas Raiders and Cleveland Browns, they were set to kick off tomorrow. Instead, they're rescheduled to play on Monday. The league also moved two Sunday games, Seahawks and Rams, and the Washington football team and the Philadelphia Eagles, both games now scheduled to kick off on Tuesday, 7 Eastern. This comes as the NFL tightens its COVID rules in response to the surge of infections starting this week. Everyone must wear masks indoors, even if they're vaccinated and boosted. Team meetings will have to be remote or outdoors. The league also banning in-person group meals. And there'll be a limit on the number of people even in the weight room. The NBA also reimposing COVID rules. Everybody will need to wear masks in almost all circumstances, except for players on the court and coaches on the bench. The league's also to increase testing through the holiday season. This rise of infection also hitting the ice, NHL postponing a number of games in the U.S. and Canada through Christmas, and using stricter protocols through at least the end of, or at least through the new year. It's not all bad news in sports, though. Tiger Woods teeing up with his son today at an exhibition tournament in Orlando. It's his first competitive round of golf since that high-speed car crash near Los Angeles earlier this year.
And that was the first swing, first hole.
But he hit it in the rough. Not a great start to the round, but the 15-time major winner upped his game. Take a look at this shot in the second hole. As you will see, his short game, pretty well on point. I have never done that. And his son, Charlie, a chip off the old block. The 12-year-old hitting a beauty on 11. Like father. Wow. Good Lord. This comes 2 weeks after Tiger acknowledged his days as a full-time professional golfer are over. He says he's still in pain and still recovering from the crash that shattered his right leg. Tiger revealed his injury was so bad his doctors considered amputating his leg. Todd Lewis is here, anchor and reporter at the Golf Channel. Todd, you saw Tiger play today. How did he look? How did it feel?
Better than expected, in my opinion. He had actually more speed through his golf swing than I anticipated.
He said he didn't, though. He complained about it. But I heard he hit a 330. Our own Sam Brock reports he hit a 330 drive. That's not small.
Well, no, he hit a shot that I witnessed about 325. Tiger's very good at kind of hustling us and lowering our expectations, and then all of a sudden going out there and playing like Tiger. Eventually, he's not there yet. But in regards to his golf swing, it looked really, really good today. I was impressed. His hands are always going to be good. When I say his hands, I'm talking about his wedge game, his putting. But off the tee, I thought he had a pretty decent amount of speed, and I think he's on a good path to return to the world stage.
And what about Charlie, the 12-year-old? Is he on a path too? Is he a future PGA-er?
He's an accomplished young player. He's the age of 12. He's going to be playing this golf course at 6,000 yards. His dad and the other PGA Tour professionals in the field will be playing at about 7,100 yards. He doesn't hit it 300 yards, but at the age of 12, he's about 240 yards. Wow. And just like his dad, great hands, good wedge game, nice on the greens. He's got a chance to be one of those rare players that follows a PGA Tour player onto the PGA Tour. But of course, his dad casts a long shadow.
Todd, Tiger says he aims to make his official pro return next year at the Open. If he does, I mean, would that be to you the greatest comeback of all time?
It definitely would be up there, Shepard. I mean, it's phenomenal if you consider how damaged his right leg is and how much it's needed in the golf swing. Look, I mean, people are going to watch him this weekend and see him hit some great shots and just get excited. It's like, oh, maybe he could play at Torrey Pines, which he normally does, or maybe he could play the Masters at Augusta National. He still cannot walk 72 holes. Yeah. He said today he can't walk on a flat golf course like here at the Ritz-Carlton Orlando. So getting on a course with lots of elevation like Augusta National, it's going to be very, very challenging for him. The walking is the big issue. The golf swing looks pretty good right now.
And is the thinking that the walking will improve, or is it just so messed up that this is how it is?
No, it will improve, but he's going to have to manage some pain. His right ankle was essentially shattered. There's a lot of metal in that right ankle, and those bones will heal. But talking to orthopedic surgeons, especially in the sporting world, because it's the ankle and you have so many joints there, you're going to have to deal with a lot of arthritic pain, especially at a guy at the age of Tiger is, who's closer to 50 than he is 40. So it's going to be an issue for him. But look, I've made the mistake of counting him out a long time ago, several times, and I'm not going to count him out again.
I don't blame you. Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel. Thanks so much. Buy now, pay later. It's booming. Except there may be a problem. why federal regulators are investigating the programs. The largest bank in America just hit with a $200 million fine. Why the company's employees, what they allegedly did that got them in so much trouble. And the jury in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, one step closer to deliberating, the defense resting its case. Why, who jurors heard from and who they didn't. As we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on a Friday from CNBC.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Buy now, pay later. We've reported that the program that some online shoppers use when they check out is booming. It lets people pay for their items over several months' installments, kind of like the old layaway plan. The program has exploded in popularity, especially among young Americans. According to Cornerstone Advisors, the percentage of Gen Zers using Buy Now, Pay Later programs has grown sixfold, from 6% in 2019 to 36% this year. But now a consumer watchdog is taking aim at the program. CNBC's Kate Rooney now. Kate, why is that?
Shep, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has some concerns about the rising popularity of these loans. The CFPB, as it's also called, is especially worried about shoppers racking up debt through these plans, a lack of regulatory disclosures, and how companies are using customer data. This week, the agency opening an inquiry around five of the biggest names in the space, Affirm, Klarna, Afterpay, PayPal, and Zip, all say they are cooperating. It comes amid rising costs and inflation, with consumers looking to stretch their dollars further this holiday season and maybe put that bill off a little bit longer without paying interest. And while most of these companies offer short-term interest-free plans, there are longer-term loans that do come with a monthly rate. The CFPB has warned that some of these charge hefty late fees as well and could even hand your debt over to collectors. Many of these platforms don't report payment history at all and don't build credit either. Consumer advocates warn buyers of retailers pushing these types of interest-free loans to encourage more spending.
They feel like if I don't have to pay for the full cost of the item today, I can afford to buy something more expensive. And so retailers like this product and they are promoting it along with the buy now, pay later companies. But that binge of shopping may not be a good thing in the long run for the market as a whole.
That spending can also result in buyer's remorse. One study shows 57% of users regretting a purchase because the item was too expensive. Another shows a third of BNPL users reporting falling behind on at least one payment. Still, buy now, pay later companies like Affirm argue their loans can be safer than even using a credit card, and their credit scoring is more accurate with lower default rates because they use alternative data instead of a FICO score. Shep.
Kate Rooney, thank you. America's largest bank slapped with a huge penalty, and that's what's topping CNBC on the money. J.P. Morgan Chase hit with a $200 million fine. The reason? Federal regulators say the bank failed to track work-related communications on its employees' personal devices. Staff members of its securities division discussed company business over text and email, bypassing strict records-keeping laws. Unapproved communications date back to at least 2015. federal law requires financial firms to keep detailed records of electronic messages. A 10-week worker strike may be coming to an end. Kellogg says it's reached a tentative agreement with the union representing 1,400 striking employees at its breakfast cereal plants. A vote on the new contract expected this Sunday. They should get the results early next week. That paving the way for a possible return to work after Christmas. And Michael Jordan still setting records. A ticket stub from his NBA debut back in 1984 just sold for $264,000. It breaks the record for the most expensive collectible sports ticket ever sold. More than 13,000 ticket holders were in Chicago that night, but only one ticket was in the best grade and condition to cash in for that price. On Wall Street, a volatile week comes to an end. The Dow down 532, its worst performance of the month. The S&P down 48, the NASDAQ down 11. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. Time's almost up for buying gifts as we hit the last weekend before Christmas. How to avoid the crowd on one of the busiest shopping days of the year. Brinksmanship on the border between Russia and Ukraine as the Kremlin puts out a list of demands to the U.S. and NATO. The State Department calls it unacceptable. But first, a decision on whether Ghislaine Maxwell will take the stand. The answer revealed in court. Maxwell says she will not testify in her criminal sex trafficking trial. The ex-girlfriend and longtime associate of the convicted sex offender, the late Jeffrey Epstein, made the announcement herself as her trial winds down in New York. Ghislaine Maxwell is accused of recruiting underage girls and grooming them for Epstein to sexually abuse. She pleaded not guilty. Authorities say Epstein killed himself in prison 2 years ago. Maxwell's lawyers say she's being used as a scapegoat for accusations against him. The defense rested their case today, setting the stage for closing arguments to start on Monday. CBC's Valerie Castro, live outside the courthouse in Manhattan. Valerie?
Shep, Maxwell was given about an hour to decide if she wanted to take the stand in her own defense. She eventually stood up and told the judge, "Your Honor, the government has not proved its case beyond a reasonable doubt, and so there is no reason for me to testify." The defense wrapped up its portion of the case this afternoon after calling witnesses over the last 2 days. Today, one of those witnesses included one of Jeffrey Epstein's former girlfriends, Ava Dubin, who remained a long lifetime friend. She testified she never saw Epstein engage and inappropriate conduct with a minor. The defense has repeatedly called into question the memories of the four alleged victims in this case, and yesterday they called a memory expert to the stand. She testified that memories can be fragile and that they can be manipulated. In cross-examination, the prosecution pointed out that out of the 150 criminal cases that this expert has testified, all but one have been for the side of the defense. Other witnesses included former employees who say Maxwell was demanding but well-respected and never saw any inappropriate contact between her and any minors. Now, earlier today, the defense told the judge they were also planning to call another witness who was coming in from London but wouldn't arrive until Monday. But by the end of the day, they decided to rest their case and forego that extra testimony. Closing arguments should begin sometime on Monday. Chef.
Valerie Castro, thank you. The Sex and the City star Chris Noth accused of sexual assault by two women. They tell The Hollywood Reporter the incidents took place separately in 2004 and 2015. They say the new reboot of that TV show triggered painful memories of the incidents. The 67-year-old actor denies the accusations and claims both encounters were consensual. Here's NBC's Stephanie Gosk.
Two women using pseudonyms to keep their identities private separately accuse actor Chris Noth of sexual assault, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Allegations, Noth says, are categorically false. A woman using the name Zoe says she met Noth through her job in L.A. in the early 2000s when she was 22. He invited her to the pool at his apartment building. Zoe went with a friend, according to the article, but while alone inside, Noth forced her to have sex, telling the magazine, "It was very painful, and I yelled out, 'Stop.'" That same day, she says she went to the hospital and told medical staff and police what happened. "I had stitches. Two police officers came. I wouldn't say who it was," she said, fearing retaliation. 2 years later, according to the magazine, Zoe sought counseling at the UCLA Rape Crisis Center. The second incident allegedly took place just over a decade later. Lily says Noth met her at the nightclub where she worked. She was 25 and he was 60. Starstruck, she says she went out with him one night and ended up in his New York City apartment, where Noth tried kissing her. He kept trying and trying and trying, and I should have said no more firmly and left. She says he forced her to perform oral sex, adding she felt awful and totally violated. According to text, The Hollywood Reporter says it reviewed between Lily and Noth. He wrote to her a week later. By the way, I have to ask, did you enjoy our night last week? I thought it was a lot of fun, but I wasn't quite sure how you felt. Lily responding in part that she felt slightly used and avoided his attempts to meet again. NBC News has not verified the text messages or spoken to Zoe and Lily about their accounts. Chris Noth denying the allegations, telling NBC News in a statement, these stories could have been from 30 years ago or 30 days ago. No always means no. That is a line I did not cross. The encounters were consensual. Adding, it's difficult not to question the timing of these stories coming out.
Thank you for joining me for this 45 minutes.
Noth has been in the spotlight for renewing his role as Mr. Big in And Just Like That, his character dying after riding a Peloton bike.
John!
Should we take another ride?
The exercise company released a viral commercial responding, but has now pulled the ad. For the news, I'm Stephanie Gosk.
The jury is now set to get the case in the trial of Elizabeth Holmes. Closing arguments just wrapped up a short time ago. The jurors are set to decide whether the once celebrated CEO of Theranos defrauded investors and lied to them about her company's supposedly revolutionary blood testing technology. CBC's Scott Cohn has been covering the trial from the start. He's live outside the courthouse in San Jose. Scott?
Shep, at this moment, U.S. District Judge Edward Davila is wrapping up his final instructions to the jury. This is a crucial, if often overlooked, phase of the case where he tells them how to frame the things that they've heard over the last 13 weeks of testimony and a couple of days of closing arguments. It will then be up to a jury of 8 men and 4 women from in and around Silicon Valley to decide whether the toast of Silicon Valley was in fact a fraud. The case and the fate of Elizabeth Holmes will be in their hands shortly. It could be as soon as this evening, but not before they heard from her defense attorney, Kevin Downey, who for 3 hours today hammered on the theme that Holmes had no intent to defraud. That's an essential element of the crime. On the contrary, he said, she believed she was building a technology that would change the world, so much so that she never sold a single share of stock till the bitter end. The investors who plunged nearly $1 billion into the startup knew the risks they were taking, Downey said, and the evidence of botched Theranos testing, he said that was all anecdotal. But in rebuttal, Assistant U.S. Attorney John Bostic said Holmes deliberately painted a false picture of the company to investors and patients because she was desperate for Theranos to succeed, willing to do anything. The disease that plagued Theranos wasn't a lack of effort. It was a lack of honesty, Bostic argued. That started at the top, the top being Elizabeth Holmes. So Judge Edward Davila, as I said, is instructing the jury. He is probably about two-thirds of the way through that. And what we don't know yet is whether he will have the jury start deliberating tonight. It's going on 5 p.m. Pacific time here. So we'll see whether they get it tonight or they start up on Monday. They have a lot to go through. And Shep, one of the things that we were looking for in these instructions was how the judge would instruct them on that issue of intent. The government clearly wanted a more broad view of what that constitutes. And in many ways, not in all ways, but in many ways, the judge did side with the government in that very crucial instruction.
Scott, once the jury does get this case, what's the buzz about how long this may take? There's a lot there.
There is a lot there, and that's one reason that it may be days as opposed to hours. Remember, there were 13 weeks of testimony, 32 witnesses, hundreds of exhibits. And this jury hasn't had a chance to speak to each other and actually deliberate until they actually get the case. And so they're going to want to go through that. And we know that that takes some time and decide where they all stand. It could be quick, but it could be days. On the other side of the coin, next week is a holiday week. They only have 3 days. And jurors often like to get things done, finished, before a long holiday.
Indeed they do. Scott Cohn at the courthouse. Thank you. Roger Stone showed up for his deposition with the January 6th committee today, but he refused to answer any questions. Instead, the longtime Trump ally and political operative for decades pleaded the fifth. After the deposition, Roger Stone insisted he did nothing wrong. He claimed he pleaded the fifth to prevent Democrats from, as he put it, fabricating perjury charges against him.
I was not at the Capitol, and any claim, assertion, or even implication that I knew about or was involved in any way whatsoever with the illegal and politically counterproductive activities of January 6th is categorically false.
Well, the January 6th committee says Roger Stone was in Washington on January the 5th and 6th, that he had been invited to lead a march to the Capitol, and that he had promoted his attendance at the rallies and solicited support to pay for security. Roger Stone says his activities leading up to the insurrection fall under constitutionally protected free speech and the right to free assembly. With tens of thousands of combat troops massed on Ukraine's border, Russia is laying out some tough demands for the United States and NATO. They include rolling back the U.S. and NATO alliance military presence in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. The Kremlin also is demanding NATO deny membership to Ukraine and other former Soviet states. NATO officials immediately rejected the proposal, or the demands, if you will. A senior State Department official told reporters that some of the demands are unacceptable, but that the U.S. is still open to discussion. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian military has been running drills near the border to prepare for a possible invasion. This is video of a Ukrainian web designer who volunteered to become a military reservist, learning how to ambush a tank with a grenade. He says he never expected to volunteer to fight for Ukraine. A major political blow for the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. This has been building. His Conservative Party just lost control of a parliamentary seat that they've controlled for nearly 200 years. In her victory speech, the newly elected Liberal lawmaker sent a clear message to the Conservative Prime Minister.
Tonight, the people of North Shropshire have spoken on behalf of the British people. They've said loudly and clearly, Boris Johnson, the party is over. Our country is crying out for leadership. Mr. Johnson, you are no leader.
Prime Minister Johnson says he's taking personal responsibility for that shocking defeat. It comes as he faces several scandals, including reports that his staff held parties last Christmas while England was in lockdown. A Conservative Party member warned him that he has one more strike left before he's out. Prime Minister Johnson still maintains a large majority of seats in the parliament, the next nationwide election scheduled for 2024. The European Union's drug regulator has rejected a new treatment for Alzheimer's, the medicine made by Biogen. It's already faced a lot of controversy. Remember, the FDA approved this drug for use in the United States back in June. But even then, the medical community was divided about whether the data shows the drug actually works. Today, the European Medicines Agency announced the drug does not appear to be effective at treating adults with early-stage Alzheimer's. The regulator says that the studies also raised concerns about the medicine's safety. They say brain scans of patients suggested abnormal swelling or bleeding. Essentially, the agency determined that the risks of this Alzheimer drug do not outweigh the benefits. Officials at Biogen say they plan to ask the EU panel to re-examine its decision. First came Black Friday, then it was Cyber Monday. Now bring on Super Saturday. The countdown to Christmas continues, and even though a lot of people shopped and shipped early, retailers are still expecting a lot of action. James Bond wasn't able to save the box office, so how about Spider-Man? The friendly neighborhood superhero swinging into theaters, but will the crowds follow him as COVID surges? Christmas Eve, a week from tonight. Chances of getting gifts shipped in that time quickly slipping away, but last-minute shoppers still have options. Tomorrow, the retailers call Super Saturday, the final big shopping blitz before the season ends. Analysts say it's the second busiest day for stores all year. So what are the retailers expecting? Here's CNBC's Courtney Reagan.
148 million Americans plan to shop tomorrow on Super Saturday. That's a slight drop from last year, but up from 2019 before the pandemic hit. A record number of Americans shopped early this year, many worried about shortages from the supply chain congestion and on-time delivery. 42% will buy their last gift before tomorrow.
I got most of it done early, most of it online, but now I gotta get the little things for the little guys.
I spent about 12 hours shopping yesterday. I like Christmas very much, so I like the long lines and I like going shopping.
Standard shipping deadlines in time for Christmas have already passed for a number of big retailers, including Lowe's, Nike, Nordstrom, along with USPS and FedEx non-expedited shipping options. Still, 41% of Super Saturday shoppers say they'll shop online and in store. Many will use both together, buy online and pick up in store, curbside, or order online but use a delivery service like Instacart or DoorDash. Target-owned Shipt also delivers for 120 other retailers, from grocery and drug stores to large retailers like Bed Bath & Beyond and Best Buy in 5,000 U.S. cities.
It gets kind of hectic, especially when you're looking for like a hot item that everybody's looking for.
We see the back half of December, our daily orders that we deliver are double what we see the first half.
So far this holiday season, curbside accounts for 21% of all online orders for retailers that have the option. It's expected to peak at 40% or more on December 22nd and 23rd, according to Adobe's Digital Index. But if Omicron cases worsen, curbside pickup could skyrocket further. For the news, I'm Courtney Reagan in New York.
Millions of Americans may be out shopping tomorrow, but with COVID cases surging, will they be headed to the movies too? If box office estimates are any indication, the answer is yes. Thanks to Spider-Man: No Way Home. That movie expected to take in as much as $150 million in the opening weekend. And if the previews from last night and pre-sales are any indication, COVID is not stopping people from watching The Web Slinger. CNBC's Julia Boorstin live with the box office breakdown. Hi, Julia.
Well, Shep, Sony's Spider-Man No Way Home has already grossed $50 million at the domestic box office. That was yesterday, and that's the third highest preview gross of all time. Theater chain Cinemark said it was their best opening night ever, even before the pandemic. Now, this performance follows rave reviews. The film has a 95% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and this opening puts it on track to gross as much as $200 million opening weekend. That would put it right behind Black Panther and in the top 10 openings ever. Internationally, the film's already brought in $114 million in 2 days, breaking records in some key markets. Now, this strong opening is actually less of a surprise because the film pre-sold so many tickets. So the question is how much Omicron fears impact the box office over the course of the weekend and over the rest of this crucial holiday season. This does come as Denmark shuts down its theaters for 4 weeks. And just yesterday, Universal Pictures, our sister company, announced that it was delaying one of its films, Black Phone, that was set for February 4th, delaying it until June. And in parts of Canada, theaters are starting to put capacity restrictions in place at 50%. So, Shep, we'll have to see how all of these factors impact ticket sales over the weekend.
Julia Boorstin, enjoy yours. Thank you. The labor shortage hitting companies across the country. Many are offering new incentives and perks to lure in employees. But some are trying a different strategy to entice the younger workforce by getting creative with crypto. Here's CNBC's Sharon Epperson.
Stephen Garrett has a gig persuading people to download an app that ranks sports odds makers. One of the main reasons the college senior took this job as a campus brand manager was the option to be paid in cryptocurrency.
It was a pretty enticing part of the deal, coming to work for SharpRank. I think crypto is a very exciting thing that's going on right now, and it's very, you know, fun to be a part of.
Crypto is a way to get paid, but for Garrett's employer, it's also a way to make the startup stand out and help recruit young talent.
This really stood out to us as an opportunity to differentiate ourselves and become sort of a market leader with respect to how these kids are getting communicated to from a brand ambassador standpoint.
Fluctuations in cryptocurrencies make it an exciting, though potentially risky, ride. Bitcoin this year has been valued at less than $30,000 and over $67,000. In real dollars, if you got paid $670 in early November and kept it in Bitcoin, a month later, it was worth about $500. But some people, like artist Tiana Brown, are willing to take that risk to get a foothold in the crypto economy. Brown paints acrylic on canvas and also sells her works as non-fungible tokens or NFTs.
It's almost like licensing
So every time someone uses your art, you gain a percentage. So your art can potentially go up in value the more that it's used, the more that it's shared, and the more that people purchase it.
Brown hopes crypto will help take the word starving out of the description of artists.
I feel like this is an opportunity for artists to put more value into their art and for investors to acknowledge their art as something that has value.
And paying your income tax can be complicated if you're paid in crypto. The IRS requires employees to report total wages in dollars based on the value of the virtual currency on the day that you received it, regardless of whether it goes higher or lower over time. Shep?
Thanks, Sharon. Companies are reconsidering their return to office plans, some pausing them, others forging ahead. But what about the office holiday party? Is it done for good or might it make a comeback? And vandalizing and burning decorative Christmas goats. Why, you might say, it's a Swedish tradition. Holiday parties. With COVID cases on the rise, a lot of companies are scaling back or canceling their plans, sadly. But pandemic or no, have we seen the end of company-sponsored festivities? Eliza Brook is a writer for The Atlantic. She looked into this, writing an article headlined, "Office Holiday Parties Really Might Never Be the Same." Such a Grinch. Eliza, thank you. Pretty much everything was canceled last year. This year, any different?
Yes. That's kind of a mixed bag. Some offices are canceling them entirely. I think we're seeing more of that because of Omicron. But some are doing smaller parties, maybe breaking it up by department. And some are still, you know, delaying the office holiday party. They're doing a Zoom or sending gifts out to colleagues.
You know, from your reporting, is there a sense that employees even want these anymore, parties?
I mean, I think some people like them, some people don't. You know, the office holiday party has been trending in a more restrained direction for decades now. And that's kind of picked up in more recent years with the Me Too movement, greater restrictions on alcohol and, you know, dancing. So, you know, I think things have already been moving in kind of a more buttoned up direction.
Yeah, it's true. CEOs talk a lot about the importance of in-person work because it's good for culture and bonding. Does that extend to holiday parties or do we see them just kind of going away?
I mean, I do think so. You know, the HR professionals that I talk to and the event planners that I talk to do see value in holiday parties. It's sort of a chance to
embarrass yourself,
humanize each other. So there is value, I think.
All right. Thanks so much. Enjoy the article. We all have our holiday traditions, right? In the Swedish city of Gävle, it's putting up two straw goats. And some years, those goats are set on fire. Police arrested a man after a 43-foot goat and its smaller sibling went up in flames. The last time something like this happened was back in 2016. So 4 years without an incident until today. The tradition started back in 1966. People have smashed or burned the decorations dozens of times. Once somebody even tried to kidnap the giant goat using a helicopter. The BBC reports there's 24-hour security watching the goats this time around, but they caught fire too quickly to save them. The Winter Olympics just 49 days away, and Delta is the official airline for Team USA, revealing and unveiling the plane that'll take this year's athletes to Beijing. Delta says it took about 9 months, 95 gallons of paint, and more than 150 people to get the job done. The Airbus, part of an 8-year partnership between Delta and Team USA, the airline set to design aircraft for the Games through the 2028 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. But this custom jet will start flying tomorrow. CNBC's parent company owns the broadcast rights to the Olympics, and some competitions will air on this network. 65 seconds on a race to the finish. COVID spreading fast across the nation just 8 days before Christmas. New York just recorded the most new cases in a single day since the pandemic began. Disappointing news from Pfizer. The company reports its vaccine trial for younger kids suggests it's safe, but ineffective in children under 5. And Kim Potter taking the stand in her own defense. The former cop broke down in tears today as she testified that she grabbed her gun instead of her taser by mistake when she shot Dante Wright during a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, back in April. And now, you know the news. Of this Friday, December the 17th, 2021, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The News on CNBC and listen to The News podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. And stay tuned to CNBC, first in business worldwide, for American Greed. Next, get yours. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.